Okay, I will turn it over to Greg and he will explain why.
Hey everybody, it's me again. If you were here last week or watched last week's video, you know that I started off talking about this booklet, guide, document, whatever you want to call it, that Tomio had assigned me to make back in August. We finished it up a couple weeks ago, and the purpose of the book is just to kind of help us have kind of a document we can refer back to when we're trying to think about the physical forms that we use as a part of our Zen practice. I was hoping to get it all done in one sitting, and we didn't even come close last week. So Domio said to kind of spread it out across three talks. So you'll hear from me again next week, and I'm hoping that's more than enough time to get through everything in the booklet. Just a quick, really quick recap from last week. If you weren't here, you can watch the video if you want a more in-depth version of this. But we just kind of did an introduction, talked about what the Zen forms are. So basically, these are the physical movements, for the most part, that define our practice. And this is what practice looks like. It's what gives it shape. It's what we do when we're not meditating, but we're practicing formally. Ideally, in my mind, these forms help us to bring our practice further than just the formal setting of the dirt or the cloud zendo. But they're kind of like a stepping stone to move us into doing what Kjogan Carlson calls as being ordained into our lives, what Charlotte Choco Beck refers to as everyday Zen. I don't know who coined this phrase, but we use it a lot. Take those of us who have an interest in taking our practice off the cushion. These are some things that gradually take us further and further off of our cushion, but keep our practice at the forefront of our lives and our minds. If that's something that's important to you, for me that is. That's the whole point of it all, is to continue practicing, continue being mindful, to have a sort of like zazen of my life that I'm just always kind of in touch with. And I feel like these forms are a good way to kind of to carry us there. So today we're going to talk about chapters 2 and 3 of the booklet. These are the forms that kind of take us off the cushion, but just kind of like into whatever we consider our zendo, whether you're sitting there in the dirt zendo right now, or if you're sitting in your home in front of a screen, like you're kind of in your zendo right now. So we'll talk about all the forms that you're using in this zendo you're sitting at this moment. And then next week we'll move into the forms that kind of take us even further out. Like I have a door right here, you all have a door somewhere nearby you, and you're going to walk through it. So next week we'll talk about how these forms might carry us through those doors, and what our practice with the forms can look like outside of our formal practice, how we can kind of carry it off into the rest of our lives. So I'm going to share the book with us, and we're just going to kind of go through it together, starting on chapter 2. Right. Can you all see that? I can't really see any of you, but I'm going to
Yes,
assume
we
you
can
can
see
see
it.
that. Okay. Thank you, Zen. Chapter 2. So we're just going to talk about Zen.
Greg,
Yes.
I just want to let people know that this guide is available on the website. So maybe you already said that, maybe I missed it.
I
But
said
anyway.
it last week, but I didn't
Yeah,
reiterate it.
yeah. So on the front page of our website, there's a beautiful little like the cover of the book. And you can click it and you can get this PDF. So it's easily accessible.
It's under the resources tab near the where you would access the champ book. So yeah, if you want to follow along, you can do that by looking at your screen right now, I guess. But this is available on the website for you to access at any time. So we're starting with chapter 2 today. We're just going to talk about the actual forms that are part of our formal practice with each other as BrightWay Zen members. Trying to just make it easier for me to see the whole page because I've got all of you on the right side of the screen here. All right, that's better. But it says the title of the book is Zen Forms and Their Use in the Cloud Zendo Practice, but this applies just as much to the Dirt Zendo folks as well. This is just how to practice these forms and why we do it. So I'm just going to read the introduction here, and then we'll go through each form kind of one by one. I have some questions I want to ask all of you, but I want to get through this in time for you to ask your questions first. So I'll go through these two chapters relatively quickly. We'll open up for questions after that, and then if there's time, we'll have a little bit more discussion about these, all this stuff kind of more from a general point of view. So I'm just going to read this here. It says the Dirt and Cloud Zendos come together twice a week for classes on Tuesdays and Dharma talks on Sundays. Both meetings are preceded by a period of zazen and a period of chanting. The Dirt Zendo participants all follow all particular forms from the time they enter the Zendo until the time they leave. They do so every time they enter the Zendo without fail, because that is what a person does in a Zendo. It's a matter of tradition, respect, and deep Zen practice. If possible, Cloud members should consider designating a room or even a corner of a room as their physical Zendo. I have a little corner in my guest bedroom here. All my Zen practice happens in that corner. It stays set up that way all the time. And I wouldn't do it every day if it wasn't set up that way. Like I sit every day, I have a little chanting practice I do every day. I make an offering to my altar every day. If I had to set it all up for myself to do that, if my Zafu was under the bed, it would never happen. But since it's all set up, it's almost there, kind of inviting me to come in and do my thing. So it's, I find it really helpful to just have a part of your house like just already set up for this. So when we're physically in this space, we might leave our shoes neatly outside of the space, like you all do in the Dirt Zendo. You might bow to an image of the Buddha that resides there when you enter and leave the space. You might give offerings of food, drink, incense, etc., at your butsudan or home altar. Those are two distinct things. Those aren't synonyms for one another, but some of you may use a butsudan. Some of you may use a home altar. We'll talk more about those differences next week and some other things. As the next sentence says, some practical ideas for setting up the space can be found in chapters 4 and 5 and in next Sunday's talk. But for now, imagine these recommendations for practicing within Right Way Zen's cloud as taking place in your home Zendo, whatever that might look like for you. And again, these are the same forms that you're all doing in the Dirt Zendo. You all have a certain luxury, I suppose, where you can see another human being in any direction you happen to be facing or looking. And you're able to see these more clearly. So this booklet was kind of like conceived as a way for those of us who can't see, like you're all just like tiny little dots on in the corner of a tiny little box in the corner of a screen on my computer. And that's true for all of us in the clouds. So these are ways for us in the cloud to just get a closer look at them. But that doesn't mean, I don't think that newer people, especially to the Dirt Zendo, can't benefit from just seeing these things up close in pictures and having some textual descriptions of them. And that's what this chapter gives. So just to pick up where I left off, it can be confusing to start practice with any group and not know the culture of that group. What are the forms and traditions that make the group tick? What unites them? What do they all do in common? What can I learn about myself as I try to engage with these forms? In a group devoted to moving and speaking as a cohesive, interdependent unit, it can be downright frustrating to figure out how to blend in. The Bright Way Zen chant book, which is linked here in this book if you want to get there easily, does much to ensure we are not lost when it comes to the words we use in unison. But everything else must be learned from observation from this book, or like we talked about last week, just kind of through osmosis, just by being around it. This chapter is intended to give you a strong basis from which to build your practice of the forms, but it is not a substitute for also watching as best as you can other more experienced practitioners in their Zoom boxes, both in their homes and in Dirt Zendo. I said last week I have particular people whose boxes I look at. I wrote this book, but that doesn't mean I always remember everything that's in it. And I still need to look at other people in their section of the Zoom box, or sometimes I'm able to see the Dirt Zendo clearly enough to figure out what's going on, but I get twisted around. I forget what place we are sometimes. So it's really helpful to just have people around to look at. So take advantage of that when you can. Members should also do their best to attend session and weekly meetings whenever possible in order to become more familiar with the forums, and many other reasons as well too, obviously. Additionally, there are 15-minute breaks between zazen and the class talk, a class or talk in every meeting, during which you can meet with other Sangha members. Please use this time to make friends, ask questions, and just be there in order to form relationships, and we can help each other with all of this stuff and grow together as a group. So here's some common physical forms and examples of when they're used. James was kind enough to send in quite a few pictures of to demonstrate a lot of these forms. So was Mick. Ava sent some in. Jinryu, Shoketsu. So thanks to everybody. This was definitely a group effort. A lot of us worked together on this. So here's James with his hands in Gassho. If I feel like there's nobody in the meeting today that doesn't know what Gassho is, but basically this is a way that we greet each other, thank each other, say farewell to one another, and it's a form of respect, a form of humility. There's a point here where I describe it where I read while I was researching this that Thich Nhat Hanh points out that this shape looks a lot like a lotus flower. So when we put our hands in Gassho, when we first encounter one of our friends or even a new person, it's almost as if we're giving them a flower. So it's just this really nice way to kind of greet each other. Like when we wave to each other, like if you think back of like in the history of the wave, like it's kind of a way to show people that you don't have any weapons. Like in olden times when we would encounter other people on a trail or walking down a road or something, we would do this to say like, hey, I'm not a threat to you, right? And I don't have any weapons. My hands are free. You don't have to, you can feel safe around me. But what says that better than like handing someone a flower? Like, I'm not, I think this is a much better way to greet a person, to say like, here's a flower, than to say like, hands up, like I'm safe. I'm not gonna hurt you. So a gassho is a really beautiful one of our forms that I think is really important, and we use a lot, and it's helpful to use mindfully and remember the purposes of a lot of these forms. So we bow a lot when we do this practice as well. We talked a bit about bowing yesterday and how, and not yesterday, but last Sunday, and how this can be one of the ones that's harder for some of us to wrap our heads around and to feel okay with emotionally. And if you want to hear more about that, and that's, and you weren't here Sunday, there's a pretty long discussion of that that you can look at in the video. But I'm not going to spend a lot of time on that today, but we're going to focus more just on actually doing this. It can be done standing or sitting down from a chair. You can do this in a bed if you find yourself maybe like in the hospital or something, and the chaplain comes in and you want to bow to them. Obviously, you can do this, you know, from a prone position, from sitting down. But basically, I don't think I have to tell you all too much about how to bow. But you put your hands in Gassho, you bend at the waist, and then you come back up again. And you can do that from any position, no matter what position your legs are in. It's just the same with your upper body, no matter what. Sanpai is the word for the full prostrations we do. We did six of these today at the beginning and end of our chanting ceremony, where you bow and you bring yourself all the way to the ground, you prostrate yourself before your altar or the altar and the dirt sendo or the your computer screen where the altar and the dirt sendo is being shown. You lift your hands up above your head. And I'm going to go through this step by step with pictures in a minute, but I'm just kind of pointing out which form we're talking about here. It's that one where you go down on the floor, lift your hands up, and get back up again. So when it's time to do Sanpai, the three or the full prostrations, there'll be a ring down in the zendo. And when you know, so a ring down, as I'm sure all of you know, but if you're unfamiliar, so when you hear the bell in the zendo going, it starts off going slow, and then it goes faster, and then it stops, and then there's another bell, and when you hear that bell, that's when you begin your first prostration. So to do that, you'll be standing in with your hands in Gassho, waiting for the ring down. When that one steady bell rings, you'll kneel down, sit on your heels. If you're wearing a wagesa or a rakusu, or any sort of vestment, you want to prevent your vestments from touching the ground. So if you're wearing it, you'll cover it like I'm doing there with one of your hands while lifting your other hand up with your hand with the palm facing toward you or toward the the space behind you. If you're not wearing any vestments around your neck, you'll hold both hands up as you bend over and put your forehead to the floor and the backs of your hands to the floor. And then you'll lift those hands up as if you're lifting the Buddha with your hands, or if that's hard for you personally to think about lifting the Buddha, there are many other things you can imagine that you're lifting up there with your hands that may make you more comfortable. And then you do the whole thing back in reverse again. You put your hands back down on the floor, as in picture six here on the bottom right. You bring your head back up with your hands still raised, protecting your Wagyasa or your Rakusu from rubbing against the ground. If you're wearing one, using both hands, having both hands in the air. If you're not, put your hands back in Gassho as you're up and you come upright, kneel back up, and then stand yourself back up. And then we do that two more times. We typically do these in groups of three, once for the Dharma, once for the Buddha, once for the Dharma, once for the Sangha. If kneeling is not comfortable for you, you can modify this as James is doing in this picture here at the top right. When you, rather than kneeling on the ground, when you bend over and lift your hands up above your head, you just do so while your legs are straight and holding you up and from a standing position. So pretty much all these forms that involve bowing, all of the forms that involve your full body essentially can be done with your legs in any position, right? Like when you're just doing a standing bow, you can also be doing it while you're sitting. I was going to show you, but it's just taking a lot of long because this is such a large document. But yeah, you can do this standing, sitting, lying down. It doesn't matter. Walking. It just depends on the context. Same here. You can bend your any position from which you can bend your waist. You can do a bow, and if you have to modify the full bows, you can do so as James will be doing in this picture as soon as it loads in that picture there. Same with sitting zazen, as we'll talk about in a few moments too. Our backs and upper body are in the same position no matter what way we decide to sit zazen. It's just a matter of how we decide where we decide to put our legs that can change just depending on our level of comfort, or sometimes the context. Like I sit on the floor, but if I'm on an airplane for a really long flight, I'll be sitting in a chair when I do it. If I've done it in bed when I had COVID, I would do zazen in bed, and you can still do all the same upper body positions without having to have your legs in full lotus for every time you do zazen, if you do it at all. So another one of our forms is chanting. We're moving our body there too. Our mouths are moving, our vocal cords are vibrating, our tongue and lips are all articulating these different sounds that we're making to create these sounds in harmony with one another. This is, for me, I think the best part of the forms is that they help us build this sort of harmony, this understanding, and like it's this physical demonstration of interdependence, interbeing, interconnectedness. We're all doing these things together. It's this like really beautiful, like physically enacted metaphor for what our practice stands for. And which to me is going out and doing this bodhisattva activity and like living our lives as if we're all connected. And so these different forms that we act together, we move together, we speak together, we meditate together, we're one cohesive unit. And for me, these forms are ways to bring that cohesion out through my front door and kind of do my best to live in that same sense of harmony and selflessness. Outside of our Zen meeting, outside of my personal practice that I do in the mornings here by myself. So chanting, I think, is the best way to do that. We're basically singing a song together. What better way to communicate or to commune and feel like as like a singular group with all of your friends? So we have multiple different chanting services. There's another link here, the chant book there that you can follow along with. The chants that we do together change based on the context. Sunday is different than Tuesday. Different chants are chanted on different different Tuesdays. We have two different chant services that happen on Sundays. But the main idea is to follow along, to do it out loud, to keep your microphone off if you are in the cloud while you're saying it out loud so you don't interfere with everyone's ability to hear what's going on. But the idea is to chant out loud together as a group. There are particular forms for the way you hold your chant book. Typically, you put your thumb and your pinky on the inside of the booklet and your other three fingers on the outside of the booklet on each side. You can modify that with a printed piece printout from your computer if you printed it out yourself, a binder that you might keep printers printouts like that inside of, whatever booklet you have. I have a picture of like how I might modify that if I'm using my cell phone to read through the chants on online. You can modify that to use with an iPad, or I don't know if you can access it on a Kindle or something like that, but if that's how you do that, I don't know. The idea is to kind of hold it in this way, to and so you can do that instead of holding your hands in gassho. The chant book really shouldn't touch the ground either. I don't know why I say either. In the next chapter, we're gonna. Oh yeah, I did tell you, like in the wageisa or whatever vestments you're wearing, we should avoid touching the ground. And the reason for that is they kind of symbolize the Buddhist teachings to us, and we don't want to tarnish the Buddhist teachings by rubbing them on the ground. And the chant book is the same way. A lot of those are his own words or words of other ancestors and people in our lineage who have taught us these things that define the way that we practice and in some cases live our lives. So we don't want to tarnish them by putting them on the floor. So you can put it on your zabuton, or if you have another place in your home or in the zazen where you can put that down. It's a better place for the booklet than your floor, the chant book, I mean. This book you can put wherever you want if you print it. Zazen, I'm not going to go through how to do zazen. That's many talks that would never fit in this space, but I'm going to talk about the physical forms that we engage in while we're doing zazen. There are some links here on Domio's instructions for zazen down here at the bottom left of the screen. Dogen has some instructions on zazen that I'm sure you're all familiar with. The Fukan Zazengi gets chanted a lot in our chanting service, and I'm sure you've all just kind of read that on your own as well. It's in the chant book if you're not familiar with it for any reason, and it's linked here as well. But there are a lot of different positions we can choose to sit in when we're sitting zazen. No matter what way we have our legs, we always have our hands in this cosmic or the meditation mudra, where we have our left hand on top of our right hand and our thumbs touching in the way that's pictured there. And then there's a lot of different things we can do with our legs, but we keep our back straight. We try not to lean in one way, one to the left or the right, to forward or back. We kind of just try to say, keep our backs upright, our hands in that mudra, our heads and neck straight, and our eyes oriented about 3 or 3 to 6 feet in front of us, or at the white wall that's ideally in front of us. And then the only things that really vary here are where we put our legs. You want to choose a leg position that's going to be comfortable enough for you that you're not going to be distracted the whole time about how much pain you're in or how uncomfortable you are, but that's also going to be able to keep you feel alert enough not to fall asleep or to get too comfortable. So you're looking for the middle way here with whatever leg position you choose. I'm demonstrating the full lotus position on the left, where you put your upturned feet on the opposite each of the opposite thighs. You can modify that by doing a half lotus. We only have one foot on the opposite thigh. If you were to read Fukan Zazengi, I forget which leg it is, but when Dogen describes half lotus, he describes it with one specific foot on one specific thigh. As someone who's in PT right now from sitting too much, I think, and not alternating legs, because I usually sit in the half lotus. I have some problems with my left knee. Because I wasn't alternating my legs. So I'd recommend if you do use the full lotus, and even if you use the full lotus or the half lotus, to alternate legs, the dominant leg, I guess, like which leg is on top in the full lotus and which leg you actually put on your thigh in the half lotus. Lately, since I've been in PT, I've been doing this position James is demonstrating here, the Burmese position, where you're sitting with each leg, with neither foot, with both feet on the zabuton below you, with one foot in front of the other. And I would also recommend alternating which foot is in front with that position too. If you don't want to sit directly on the floor, you have some options here that James and Ava are demonstrating for us. There are two options for kneeling. James is kneeling here on a seiza, and we call that the seiza position. This is a small bench that you all can see around the dirt sendo. Some of you in the cloud sendo may not have seen that before or encountered that, but these are these little wooden benches that you can purchase online or make yourself to sit on. The way you use that is you'll put it down close to the rear of your zabuton. Then you basically, when I use it, I'll kneel with my kind of like butt up, for lack of a more sophisticated way of describing that. Place the seiza over my calves, then sit down on it. And as you can see, James has his toes kind of hanging over the back edge of this of the zabuton there. That's part of it too. That's the position you're in. So I think the idea behind that is so you don't have your knees hanging off the front of the cushion. The idea is if some part of you has to be off the cushion, better your toes than your knees. If someone knows another reason why that's part of the way that that position is typically described, please chime in. But I'm just guessing there. That's what I think. Ava modifies this, and many other people I'm sure do too, with a cushion instead of the seiza. It's probably a bit more comfortable. And it also, you don't have to buy two different things if you do sometimes want to cross your legs and alternate. I'll do this myself. If I'm in session, I'll start off often in the half lotus position. Later in the day, I'll find myself in the Burmese position, and sometimes by the end of the day, I'll be kneeling, just depending on how much pain I'm in. So instead of owning two different things that I can do that on, I just kneel on the cushion when I kneel. And then if you need to sit in a chair, there's nothing wrong with that. Again, the top half of your body is in the same position no matter which way you decide to keep your legs. But if you do sit on a chair, you don't want to lean back on the chair back. You do want to keep your back straight, just like you would if you were in any of these other positions that take place on the floor. Unless you can't, there's I do session at Shasta Abbey from time to time. I brought that up last week, and there's a monk there who's had some pretty bad back injuries, and he has this reclining lawn chair. And he does zazen in that lawn chair, and I'm sure he gets just as much, if most likely more, out of his zazen than I do sitting on a cushion. So modify these in any way that you need to for your own physical needs. But the idea is to try to find a position where you can avoid as much distraction as possible. Kinhin is walking meditation. I forgot to mention Mick also sent in quite a few pictures, so thanks to him if he's watching this video. I know he's not here today. He's demonstrating the hand position that we keep our hands in when we do walking meditation. So the idea behind Kinhin is these positions up here do hurt after a while, and when we're in session all day for days after day, the idea is to keep our minds in this mindful place where we're able to kind of do zazen all the time. But sometimes our body can't handle that, so sometimes we have to get up and walk around, sometimes we have to get up and work, sometimes we have to get up and eat. So Kinhin is one of these ways that we're able to maintain that mindfulness that we gain in zazen while giving our bodies a break. So we all did Kinhin today. I don't think I need to describe that in too much detail, but basically you'll put your hands in Sashu, as Mick has demonstrated in this picture here. You'll take your left fist, put it on your chest. If you're wearing a Wangyesa, I find it easier to kind of like hold the Wangyesa with my fingers that aren't my thumb, hold the knot, and tuck my thumb in still on top of that knot. It's just more comfortable for me, and it does, I don't know, it just feels weird not to do that. But do what feels good, do what feels comfortable. And you'll put your left hand in a fist with the thumb, with the fingers wrapped around the thumb and possibly your Wangyesa, and then your right hand over top of that fist. And then you'll walk very slowly, keeping your eyes 3 to 6 feet ahead of you. I wrote 5 here, resting on the floor, your eyes resting on the floor. as you walk slowly, one step at a time, through your home or the zendo, depending on where you are. If you're at home, pick one point to start at, one point to turn around at, and just walk back and forth in a line. Like, don't like stroll around your house. I've done this too. It's not my idea not to stroll around your house. But before I heard of this, I would just do King Henil all around my house. And I'd notice all the things that I missed the last time I cleaned, so all the things I need to remember that are out of order. I'll see chores through the windows that I haven't done outside yet. Like, I'm not in that mindful state that I was on in my cushion. I'm just like taking inventory of everything that needs to get done in my house. So if you just find two spots that aren't too far apart from one another, and just walk back and forth between those two spots, I think you'll find that your kin hin is much more useful to you than if you're just walking all over your house. All right, some working Zen or work practice or working meditation. I'm gonna read through this quickly because we're getting short on time, and then quickly go over some stuff about the Walgesa, and then we should have enough time to open it up for discussion and questions. So let's talk about work practice here. I'm just going to read a couple paragraphs here. Work practice is a great opportunity to take meditation off the cushion. During a retreat, whether practicing at home or in the cloud in Beaverton in the third Zendo or at another location at session, work practice typically involves mindfully performing a simple task. You will receive a work assignment when attending retreats in person and in the cloud. You will choose something simple that needs to be done around your home. Engaging in work practice during a retreat should be a helpful way to begin to bring the forms and practice into your everyday activities at home and work. If you can do it raking leaves at a zendo, if you can engage in work practice working leaves at a zendo, ideally with time you may be able to bring it into your much more complicated jobs that you work at every day, to your school, to your classes, to interacting with your family, to driving in traffic. Like, how long can you get off your, like, I do my meditation in the morning, and my goal, I guess, if I have one, is to keep what I get from staring at my wall for 30 minutes in the morning for as long as I can throughout the day. And the more I do work meditation in addition to that, the more I'm able to figure out and just like almost seamlessly, in some very, not very often, seamlessly kind of like incorporate that into my actual work day. So Samu can be practiced at retreats, but it can also be practiced at home and work outside of our formal Zen practice. This is everyday Zen. This is continuous practice. These are what the forms look like when we're not in formal practice, when we're not in the Zendo or our home version of a Zendo. This is where the rubber meets the road. This is where we can best realize that form is emptiness, but emptiness is also form. I talked last week, I gave a Branford Marsalis quote about how freedom really only exists within structure. How can you find the emptiness of these forms to apply them to different things throughout your life in order to bring your practice into your life every day without it just being something that you do on Sunday mornings or Tuesday nights or for a half hour in the morning or the evening or whenever you engage in your practice? How can you make this the way that you live? How can you become a bodhisattva? So since work practice can occur anywhere, anytime, it's impossible to list the forms you will be using during this practice. Your intuition will have to guide you. You have to recognize that form is emptiness. Emptiness is form. The important thing to keep in mind is that work should be approached with an intention of executing the four bodhisattva vows. My guess is you all have this memorized, but I'll just say it out loud anyway. Beings are numberless. I vow to free them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless. I vow to enter them. The Buddha way is unsurpassable. I vow to embody it. Every aspect of our practice is training. We call it practice because we're practicing for the rest of our lives. We're practicing to be bodhisattvas. For me, like what we're doing right here today for these couple hours every Sunday morning, it's kind of like a laboratory where I get to like try out these formal versions of the things that I do for the rest of the week, day to day. In my life with the people and the things and the animals and the everything else, how I harmonize with the rest of the world and the way and how I do the bodhisattva activity that is kind of, I think, the aim of this entire practice. So that's a, I think that's a good introduction to work practice. That you, most of you have done this before. So this next section is headed with the phrase putting the forms into practice from the home. These are all the steps that you will encounter, not just in at home though. Zooming into a Monday, a Tuesday, or a Sunday service. But I think if you were to read through this as a Dirt Cloud, as a Dirt Zendo member, this would seem pretty familiar to you too. And if there are times in the Dirt Zendo when you're not really clear on when to do certain things, I think you can refer to these few pages too, page 20 of 62, to just remind yourself of when we do different forms throughout a formal service on a Tuesday or a Sunday. And this works kind of like a choose your own adventure book, like depending on whether it's a Tuesday or a Sunday, you can it tells you to where to kind of like skip around in this list of steps. But there are different things. I'm not going to go through this all with you. You can all read this. I recommend if you don't, I doubt a lot of you are going to print out 62 pages of this. I know James is printing out a few copies to have around the Dirt Zendo. But if you are going to print any of this, I would print these next few pages, page 20 through. Twenty-five. So if you, five pages, if you double side it, that's only three pieces of paper. That's not too many trees gone to the wind. But as you can see, this is like step by step. This is everything that you do when you do every single one of the forms that we just talked about when you're in formal practice. So you can print that out. Just have it next to you on your near your zabuton. If you've already got your Wagesa and your chant book there because of the way you don't have anywhere else to put them when you're sitting. This you can stick on the floor. I don't think there's going to be any problem with having these pages on the floor, and just follow along with it, and it'll just tell you if you're not sure if you're supposed to bow here, how many times you're supposed to bow here, to have my hands in gassho, shashu, all that stuff is all just listed here step by step. It's the whole Tuesday service, the whole Sunday service, just listed. Every single step of it. So chapter three, just real quick, this is donning and doffing your Wagesa. Here's make just modeling what a Wagesa is if you haven't seen one before, or if you have and you see like some of us in the Dirt and Cloud Zendo wearing them and some of us not, if you're wondering what these are. This is a vestment that we receive when we formally take the precepts, the Bodhisattva precepts, or what's called, we go through a ceremony called Jukai, where we agree to follow the Bodhisattva precepts. And for, if you're not familiar with that, the next Tuesday, the next thing we'll be studying and the Tuesday night sessions will be in preparation for this year's Jukai ceremony. So we'll be going through all the precepts as a group over the next few months. But basically, there are forms that surround the proper use of the Wagesa. Remember, as I said earlier, the Wagesa is a symbol of the Buddhist teaching, so we treat it with respect accordingly. If you're have, if you have it with you when you're meditating, it's a good idea to just to keep it on your zabuton here rather than putting it on the floor or somewhere like that. We wear it throughout the day. If we're in session, we'll wear it throughout the day. If we're not, we'll just wear it throughout our session. There are certain circumstances under which you would take it off. Usually, if you're going to get it dirty, if you go to the bathroom, things like that, you don't want to get it dirty or disrespect it in that way. If you do, though, like accidents happen. I've walked into the bathroom of the Wagesa a bunch of times. All you do is just take it off, hold it to your head, and recite the three homages: homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha. And put it back on if you're not in a place where it's going to get dirty again, or put it away if you are. There's a particular way we fold this in order to fit it into our little cases that we get with them. That's demonstrated there. And yeah, there's a pic if you clean it by hand, hang dry it, treat it with respect, treat it with Nyoho, which we'll talk a lot about more next week. And for this week, I'm going to just leave the last 10 minutes for those of you to ask questions. So I'll just stop sharing here and please feel free to ask any questions you have. Go ahead, Jeremy.
Thank you again. This is just such a great gift for our Sangha. I wanted to make a very quick comment, and I have a quick question that just came up like 3 minutes ago. As far as sitting, I mean, it is definitely, any yoga teacher will tell you, nose over shoulders, shoulders over hips, straight as possible. I have a back condition that causes me to, I had a physical therapist actually suggest that I sit back, and it improved my comfort immensely. So the main point of sitting is get comfortable, whether that's standing, sitting, chair, on the floor, cushion, whatever, be comfortable, because that's the best way we're going to be able to meditate. The question I have is, when you're putting the wagyu or putting the robe on your head, I always chanted the robe verse.
I thought about that when I was writing this. The directions that I have there for the use of the Wagesa are from Shasta Abbey. They handed me a Wagesa when I took Chukai there, and they handed me that sheet of paper. Those are the directions they have. Usually, informal practice at Shasta Abbey, when we start our day at session, we'll chant the robe verse while we're on our cushions and then put it on. But throughout the day, as we take it on and off, we'll chant the three homages. So at the first time you put the Wagesa on, I think you do chant the robe verse, but if you're taking it on and off throughout the day, or if you like soil it somehow, like if you're washing dishes in it and you notice that you got some soap on it or something, you'll take it off. Like you'll clean it off, take it off, put it on your head, put it to your head, and then you'll chant the three homages. And then when you put it back on, if you're doing something that's gonna get it dirty, then you'll turn it backwards, so it's hanging off you that way. So if you want to leave it on while you're doing your working meditation, for example, it's turned around so you can't like get it. It doesn't wind up in the sink, or if you're scrubbing toilets, I scrub toilets at Shasta Abbey, and you don't want your Wagesa in the toilet, obviously. So you just keep it turning around. Actually, in the bathroom, though, you shouldn't even be wearing it. But hopefully that answers your question, Jimmy. Yeah, I think use the robe verse the first time you put it on, but there are occasions where you're taking it on and off throughout the day. And rather than doing the robe verse every time, you just can say the three homages, I guess, is a way to speed things up. Hey, Leah.
Hey, it's less, it's, I'm not really asking a question about how to solve this problem. I'm more like bringing it up because it's my problem, and it might be somebody else's problem too. That my, as you can see, I'm in my office, and when I am in my cl in the cloud, this is where I get the best Wi-Fi. This is where there's a stand to hold my laptop, and it needs to be plugged in all the time because it's old and all kinds of things. So this is kind of where the laptop needs to live. And my altar, my home altar, is somewhere else in the house. And I actually have a rule about electronics going upstairs. Like not taking my laptop upstairs, not taking my phone upstairs, so that the upstairs is more, that's where the bedrooms are. That's the peaceful place where electronics don't go. And then electronics are on the main floor anyway. So I have all these setups and rules already in place about my home. So I guess that's, I see people who, and you come from a place of, this around me right here is my altar, and this is where I sit, and this is my cushion, and here's my altar. It's all right here. And I don't have that. And so I'm kind of, as I'm reading this, I'm trying to puzzle out, how would I, could I set up, there's no room for altar here. There's nowhere to do prostrations here. I'm looking around, and then upstairs, I'm going, well, I keep, it's wedged in, like there's nowhere to put the, anyway, they're two separate spaces, is what I'm trying to say. So maybe somebody else has that issue too.
No, I think that's fine, Leah. One of the good things about cloud practice is there's an altar on the screen from in the dirt zendo. So wherever we choose to interact with the zendo during the Tuesday and the Sunday services, there's always going to be an altar that you can interact with on the screen if your personal altar is not in the same room as you. But I think whatever works best for you is what works. Like Shakyamuni Buddha said, to verify everything that you do. Like, don't take his word for it, and definitely don't take my word for it. Just because I did some research and put some pages together. Like, verify like what deepens your practice the most, and make that work for yourself. I don't know if your altar's in one room and your laptop's in another room, just that's fine. I think as long as you're able to find the way that works for you to help you like interact with the Sangha the best. And if you do your personal one-on-one offerings to your altar in one place and interact with us in another, I don't see any problem with that. Ellen?
Thank you very much.
I live in a very small space. Leah, this is you're kind of expressing things that I think about a lot. And what I have done, I have no idea if this would be frowned upon or not, but I created kind of a movable minimalist altar that I take into my son's room when he's not here. It's the only other space in our already tiny apartment that I can use. So it's basically, a small Buddha on a dish with a candle and it moves easily. And that's how I kind of got around the feeling like I wasn't in the right place all the time. Because it's very hard to find a place where there are no other humans in my space here. But most of all, Greg, I just want to thank you also. I think Jim, you said it best that this is a gift, this document. I really, really appreciate all of your work on this.
Thank you. I appreciate you saying that, Ellen. Yeah, I've been thinking a lot for other reasons about the thought of like the gift, the giver, and the receiver all being one. So
Yeah.
I'm glad you all have received it so kindly, and I feel like I've gotten a gift from that too. We're getting close, about 2 minutes. Any last questions? All right. I'll be back next week. One question I have for you then, and we don't have to answer it here. Maybe think about it for a week. This is from the Mumon Khan, the Gateless Gate. This is a book of koans. I'm not going to read the whole koan. I'm just going to read the case, which is only two sentences, and it asks a question. So before next week, or during this week, before we get together and talk again on Sunday, just think of this case. This is case 16 from the Mumon Khan, if you want to read the whole thing. But I'm going to only read you the case. If you are familiar with this book, Mumon presents a case as a koan, then he comments on it, and then gives a verse. I'm just going to do the case. So Yunmen said, "See how vast and wide the world is. Why do you put on your seven-piece robe at the sound of the bell?" I think if you think about that throughout the week, the question I think that's being asked there is, why are we doing this? What's the point of all this? Why do we get up in the morning and sit on our cushions? Why do we do these forms? What's the point? Why do we do anything? Why do we get up and go to work? Like, why do we get out of bed at all? So I hope to answer that next week. So I wrote it down this time. So abiding in this ephemeral world, like a lotus in muddy water, the line is pure and goes beyond, thus we bow to Buddha. All Buddhas throughout space and time, all honored ones, bodhisattvas, mahasattvas, wisdom beyond wisdom, maha prajna paramita. Have a good week.
Thank you, Greg.
Thank you,
Thank you.
Greg.